Hi, I'm Danielle Murphy, and you're listening to the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days, 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it, you're going to keep giving yourself challenges.
Welcome to the Breffni Early Show, where each week we bring you somebody who is interesting, inspirational and motivational, and this week is absolutely no exception. I'm delighted to welcome Queen of Europe, Danielle Murphy, to the show. Danielle, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Queen of Europe applies to your professional life, which is as a drift racer.
Yes, correct.
Now, in my head, I've got visions of the Fast and the Furious coming through. We're going to talk more about drift racing and your whole career in motorsport a little bit later, but I want to rewind to you as a teenage girl growing up in West County, Dublin. Tell me about you and how, I suppose, you became this motor racing sensation.
It's pretty weird, I suppose. My first love was horses. So all through my primary school and secondary school, it was just horses. I competed very, very successfully at show jumping. But then I always had the interest in cars and racing. My parents, we had a very successful haulage company at the time, so we had a bit of land. So my parents always encouraged us to know how to drive, to have the knowledge of how to drive, because we were around a lot of heavy machinery and dangerous machinery. So I suppose when it came, I was 17, of course, of legal driving age in Ireland. I had my first car, which was a little Rover. And I moved up then to, obviously I needed something to tow a horse box around. I had the Pajero Shogun. And then I realized someone opened the door to me one day and showed me a photograph of what is known as the Pajero Evolution, which is a pretty concept model of the 4x4 Pajero. So I got in my head that I wanted one of these so I could balance the horses plus a fast car. As for that, then it kind of just went on. Within a year, I realized I couldn't do the two of them. The horses went and I got into cars.
Have you always been up at speed? Has that always been something that you wanted to be?
Yeah, I've always just been an adrenaline junkie, I suppose, within reason. You know, I'm terrified of heights and different two wheels I've kept away from because it was too much. But yeah, I always kind of had a need for speed and driving, with whether it was go-karts, having fun with my brothers, we were always competitive, or anything like that.
What was your first entry into the world of motorsport?
My first entry, I competed at a few car shows, but I wouldn't really class that as entry into motorsport.
Now, I've never been to a car show, so okay. What does that involve? I'm a complete novice to cars. My car has four wheels, steering wheel,
and
doors and a roof, and it moves when I press the accelerator. That's all I know about cars. So you're going to have to give me and the listeners an education on what motorsport is. Of course, I've seen Formula One, I've seen rallies, but I don't know the details of anything behind it. So what age were you when you first got involved, and what was that first entry?
I was 17, and as I say, the car shows, which is basically, it could have been modified cars, the tuning cars, a lot of people on the outside might see as the boy racer scene. There's a borderline between the two. But there was professional stunt driving at these shows, and I remember just thinking, I can do that. So I actually progressed, I got into the stunt driving at shows, and drifting started in Ireland. It's actually, I think, the 11th year this year. And I seen that as a challenge. I was like, I can do that too. So I've always set goals for myself, even with the horses. I suppose probably being so disciplined with having animals like that in competition, you discipline yourself and you set achievable goals, because there's fitness involved, there's endurance, there's competitions. And it's pretty much the same aspect for me now. But with the motorsport, like, I always wanted to get into rallying. I loved rallying. I loved the thrill of it. I loved the fact you could go flat out and push all the limits down back roads. But I could never afford it. And when drifting started, as I say, it was deemed as the poor man's motorsport at the time. You know, you could probably buy a car for 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 euros and get started. My first competition was 8 years ago this year. And I flew to the UK to collect a car on a Wednesday evening. I arrived back into Dublin Thursday evening, done a bit of work on the car, and I arrived to my first competition the Friday morning without any practice previous, and I actually came 13th. So it was literally, I've always just pounced on things.
That sounds kind of respectable, for given that there's little to no preparation put into it. Now, you mentioned the modifications that you made yourself.
Mm.
And again, I'm going to be so stereotypical here, and I apologize in advance, but it's for the benefit of the discussion.
No, I didn't just clean the car.
Most people don't associate female drivers, stereotypical female drivers, with the ability to change a tire. Never mind make modifications under the hood of the car. Have you always tinkered with engines and cars?
Not until I blew an engine up and I had to figure it out.
When did that happen? That sounds like a story we need to hear.
No, there's been a couple of things over the years. When I started the competition, I realised if I want to do it, I'm on my own. You know, I didn't have boyfriends or brothers kind of. I do have brothers, but I didn't have anyone that really shared the passion that I shared at that time. So I knew it was sink or swim. So between changing the tyres, getting the car to events, the worst case was when the engine blew. That was, I think, 6 years ago now, five, 6 years ago. And I had a very important invitation event the following weekend. So I didn't want to turn down this opportunity. Everything is a stepping ladder for me. So the only way I could do it, I couldn't afford to buy an engine. I couldn't afford someone to pay, you know, to fix the engine for me, and even if I had the money, they weren't willing to do it within the time frame. So I literally worked around the clock. I stripped the engine down, kind of set everything out, remembering and educating myself as we went, and with the help of Google, with just for torque settings, we got the engine built back up again.
See, that's what I was going to ask, was because I was going to be facetious and say, oh, what, you YouTube how to fix an engine, but that sounds pretty much what you did.
Within reason. I mean, obviously, yes, you don't believe everything you read on the internet. I done research and found balance.
What, aliens aren't real?
No, oh my God, really?
There goes my hope of living on Mars. Sorry, way off topic. But yeah, so you basically Googled how to strip an engine and how to fix an engine again.
And there was a couple of things I was unsure about, you know, different procedures that I would actually call. I was in the UK at the time. And I actually called a few guys here in Ireland, friends of mine in the that are obviously have a lot more experience. So yeah, between photographs over the internet, sending them backward and forward, talking to them, and through Google, yeah, I got it back together. Thankfully, it had held up for another 3 years.
Were you worried getting back in the car? Because I'm not saying that because you're a woman. I'm saying that because you're a novice at stripping an engine down. Because even I cycled around the world last year, and the first couple of times I did anything other than change a tire, I panicked a little bit that maybe I'd broken something or maybe I couldn't fix it in the situation I was in. What was the thoughts going when you took to the start line of that event?
Never mind the start line. It was the first turn of the key going, I won't actually repeat exactly how I felt inside without using
bad
language.
You can do it. It's not public radio. It's fine.
I was shitting myself, to put it nicely. But I suppose once the engine was up and it was checked over, we got it down to the tuner, down to the dyno, and everything looked okay. So, yeah, it was a massive risk.
Would you be confident doing it again with no help?
I've done it 5-6 times since.
So, yeah, you get used to it. It just becomes something you become good at. It's something I hope I never have to become good at.
I hope I never have to do it again.
So I want to take you back to your first event. And obviously, motor racing is something, it's seen as very macho, it's seen as very male-dominated. The girls are usually just there in bikinis to show off. That's the image we get in the media. But in most people's heads involved in the sport, particularly 7-8 years ago when you got involved, a woman's place was on a bonnet rather than the driver's seat. What was it like the first time they realised you were going to be actually competing against the boys in those events?
Yeah, going back to it, a few of them, I think I was kind of early 20s by the time I'd actually started to compete. And because of the stunt driving and a few show attendances, not majority, but some people knew of me. I had been recommended for different things through shows and invitations. But when I started, it was a minority. Oh yeah, well, what's she going to do? All hair and all, you know, this, that and the other. I do portray, regardless, even to...
You have hair?
No. Even to this day, I'd walk around the paddock in my heels. I live in heels. I'm not stereotypical, but I am a woman. You know, I portray myself as a woman. yes, there's other times I'm in the hoodie and working on the car full of grease. But, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to just... Like, there was a lot of support through guys that would have knew my history and, you know that, well, she's, you know, she's not here just to look good. She actually wants to do this. So in that sense, I didn't suffer a lot compared to what I've seen other girls go through. And then as the years kind of progressed, that has changed from, oh yeah, fair play to you, to Jesus, oh, can I help you? What, you know, do you need a hand? Do you need this? Do you need that? Anything at all? And if I asked for help, there'd be absolutely no problem. Whereas now, fast forward to today, it's unfortunate that it's like jealousy has taken over some of these people. So I've experienced from literally down at the start with a lot of encouragement and things like that. But now, as my hobby has kind of, it's grown into a career, to be realistic. It's a profession. And
so I'm sensing that at the start, the novelty of having a female was there and it's great. Oh, isn't she great having a girl to play
with?
Whereas now it's like, well, we don't want to get beaten by her. We're happy for her to be here, but not to be ahead of us on the leaderboard.
Yeah, as I start kind of getting up, coming up the ranks and getting, you know, pretty competitive in basically not really up-to-date cars. You know, I was competing against guys that would be a couple of years ahead and in advance of me, plus the car performance. Whereas I just come and rock up in a little shitty thing that I just put together or bought, and, you know, I was going out and being competitive against them. So as that starts to set in, yeah, they don't like being eaten by a girl. Their friends rip the piss out of them.
It's schoolyard procedures and schoolyard bullying, but that's effectively what it is on a professional level. It's one of those things, and I know we met a few days ago at the Sport for Development conference where there was a film festival in Dublin, and they showed a movie called Speed Sisters, and you obviously had competed against one of the girls featured in the movie.
Yes.
in drifting. Nor, I think, was the girl's name.
Yeah, no doubt.
The movie was great, and the panel discussion that we were involved in beforehand I thought was really, really good. But one of the questions that was asked in the panel discussion, and yourself and Nicole Drought, the other member of the panel, had very different responses to it, came down to finance.
Yes.
And you were able to say almost to the dollar and to the euro and the pound how much it costs to keep a car on the road. Whereas when Nicole, who's kind of more traditional in sense of she's managed and she's part of a team and she's got this group around her, when she was put to the question, what's the cost of keeping your car going for a year? She just said, I don't know. And her manager kind of piped up and said, it's because I look after all of that. Yeah. How envious of are you of that? Or are you happy the way that things go for you?
I can't say I'm envious, no. I mean, I knew what I was getting into when I started. I always knew it was going to be a struggle. And not as much, mind you. But, you know, I'm dedicated to what I'm doing. Not just for the motorsport end of it, but as a woman, representing a woman in motorsport. If I could rewind it and say, yes, could someone give me 200 grand? Of course. But being realistic, I'm actually, the way things have panned out for me is I've learned my way. I've educated myself along the way. And, you know, at the end of the day, money can't buy knowledge and experience. And in the situation, like, I've had to come absolute massive obstacles, from vans breaking down literally as we're about to leave to go to the ferry, having to drive halfway around Ireland to try find something else, financial issues, being stuck in Europe, trying to get money to come home. I mean, I've literally hit every single wall possible. But I think that sets the person you are.
What's your automatic mental state when you hit an obstacle like that? Because I think initially panic sets in, but at this point, having been through it, so many of those similar situations before, do you immediately go into problem-solving mode, or do you still panic a little bit?
No, to be fair, I think that is actually probably one of my best qualities, is I'm very good under pressure, and I actually work better under pressure with stress and under those situations. Like, there's never been something I haven't been able to solve or find a solution to. And there is a solution to every problem. You just have to find it. And if you give up, you're never going to know. So my attitude was just literally, I don't give up, never give up. The only time you give up is when the event is about to start in Europe somewhere and you're still sitting in Ireland. Then you have the problem. But no, up to final minutes, final hours, I'd have in my head, right, well, at this point, shit, right, it's not going to happen. But thankfully, we haven't. I've never actually failed on a task, should I say.
How significant is finance in your world?
Absolutely massive. Like, I'm self-funded. And along with that, you know, I've had some help from friends that own businesses and things, but it's not consistent. It is very, very stressful trying to figure out, look, I need this X amount of money to get to this event. I'm short by $2,000. What do I do? And I would say 9 times out of 10 events that I have travelled to in Europe over the past 2.5 years, I've had money to get to the events, but I haven't had money to come home. But that's just my can-do attitude is, well, feck it. I know I can get to the event, which is the most important thing. If I have to leave the car and trailer there and go begging on the streets for a week, well, that's just what has to be done. Thankfully, it hasn't actually come to begging on the streets, but it hasn't been far off it.
To put this into context, you're not just competing at these events. You're actually, when it comes to the women's side of things, you're dominating that over the last few years. And you're also competing with the guys as an equal.
Yes.
So in the Queen of Europe we mentioned, and you've won that a few times?
I've won it 2 years out of three, and I was runner-up on the third of the table.
And then the King of Europe, which is obviously the full leaderboard, how have you fared in that over the years?
I was fifth in the championship last year, and that's after missing two rounds, which was a pretty good result. The first round, I actually came second in it and qualified first, so... Yeah, I'm pretty competitive. Last year, I had, unfortunately, a good bit of mechanical failure on the car and issues, so it restricted me to make a choice of the championship. Do I chase the women's championship or do I chase the guys' championship? So I did have to back off on the men's championship last year, but I'm hoping now that this year I'll give them a proper run for the money.
In terms of cost, you gave me a figure the other night of between... 5,000 for a trip away in terms of getting the car there. And what's the setup? Do you drive the car itself, or do you put the car in a trailer and bring it, or how does that work?
I was very lucky. You know, I'm always looking for opportunities. Nissan Ireland, I'm not sure if you've heard of the Nissan Generation Next program. This is a third year running. I was in the first 10 people that actually qualified for this program, so to speak. 10 people got a vehicle to use for a year free of charge. So that has been extended to the second year, which is this year. So it's actually due to go back this year at the end of July. So that's going to obviously cause a bit of stress now while I try to figure out the solution to that problem.
Any chance Nissan might extend that a further?
Well, we're hoping, but I mean...
Negotiations are ongoing.
We need to sit down and have a chat and put something to them. So in that aspect, I've been very lucky with the van. Westwood Trailers... in Nace gave me the use of a trailer also free of charge. So, I just had to kind of explain that little bit of background.
Yep, not totally.
So now I have good, reliable transport, fresh transport for the car. So yeah, it's myself, my mum, pack up the van, load up what we need, leave Ireland. It takes on average about 2.5 to 3 days to get to any European town. We sleep in the van, we eat bread and beans and water. Yeah, it's pretty, pretty tough.
It must be hard to actually compete on that basis because you want, like, I've been to international sports events on the admin side of things, but you're looking at, it's all about nutrition, it's all about being ready mentally, it's all about being focused on the job at hand. And if you look at, for example, like Nicole, who we were with the other night, who literally just has to show up and drive the car, and you're worrying about getting to the venue, you're worrying about equipment, you're worrying about engines, you're worrying about all these other things that you don't really want to be thinking about when you're on the starting grid for a race.
Absolutely. It's, yeah, you could say, you know, I may have won championships at the moment in Europe, but by God, have I earned them. Yeah, it is very, very tough. I mean, there's times I've arrived up to the event, you know, we'd arrive on a Friday evening, you'd still have to unload the car, set up the paddock, check the car over. You could have literally driven 3 days non-stop with very, very little sleep because, like I say, we sleep in the van, so it's not exactly comfortable. We drive as much as possible until our eyes just don't stay awake anymore. Then it could be 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock on the Saturday morning, you're getting to bed, you're back up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do the last final checks, your driver's briefing, and then it's pretty, pretty mentally draining. It's for me, with everything going on. In one sense, I'm lucky that I have my mum with me because she kind of, obviously, who's going to know you better than your mother? You know, there's been times she'd literally have to grab me by the scruff of the neck and go, look, you need to snap out of this. There's only two laps, three laps, whatever. Just focus on that, forget everything else. And you do need someone like that, that can kind of, you know, what's the word, I suppose, to
support,
prepare you mentally, I suppose, because it is, like, there was one event last year, I literally worked through the night. It was actually the finals of last year. Round three, I'd actually, there's four competitions basically in Europe last year for the championship. At round three, I blew the engine up during practice. I was blessed, a guy from France offered me his car, which was the complete opposite, left-hand drive, non-turbo, so, so difficult to just even sit in and drive, let alone actually compete in. Yeah, I can see your face here going, what
yeah,
the hell?
I'm just thinking, like, I've driven left-hand drive cars, and they take a little bit of time to get used to, just to be on the open road and not hit anything. Yeah. I can only imagine how difficult it would be to get into a performance environment in a mirror image of what you're used to. So
yeah.
What normally your handbrake would be on your left-hand side, now you're pulling with the right hand. It's a complete different skill set.
That and the, because my car is turbo, you have the turbo torque, or you might have lag. I know this probably means nothing to you.
That's gone completely
now,
over my head.
But driving a turbo car to driving a non-turbo car, never mind being on the left-hand side, I'm doing everything opposite. I had three laps before my qualifying. So I had five laps in total to qualify. And I only managed to get one lap. Perfect. But I literally had to change my whole driving style within those laps. Now, these are one after the other. The guys are only giving me these laps because they kind of gave me a bit of leeway because of the situation. So, anyway, it was just mental.
Well, you still qualified and you still competed.
I still won the event.
Not just competed. I'm sorry, I take it back. I'm eating humble pie here as we speak.
Oh, believe me, no. It was probably one of my biggest kind of eye-openers, I suppose, to my own ability, driving.
How much of a kick does that give you?
Oh, well, to be honest, the kick, I mean, I was up against, my main rival is a girl from Poland, and I mean, her car was double the horsepower. The judges actually, we went to a battle one more time because the judges couldn't separate us. And afterwards, even at the end of the season, like, the judges came up to me and goes, that was definitely the most memorable moment of 2015, because under no law or level should you have beaten her and that car. So that to me was a pretty proud moment. And
okay, I'm going to ask the stupid question, okay? What is drag or drift racing?
Drifting.
Yeah, drag racing is something completely different. I know what that is. What's drift racing? I have this image. I mentioned Fast and Furious at the start, just purely because of the name of the movie was Tokyo Drift. And I have images of cars sliding around corners sideways. Explain it to me, and also how it works. What are the judges for?
Yeah, your concept is correct, but obviously we don't go around Tokyo street drifting and hitting
that
off
would be
everything.
Awesome, though.
Oh, it would. You're basically, all the cars are rear-wheel drive. You can have any engine placement, any size, there's no restrictions. But you're basically controlling a rear-wheel drive car around a course. On that course, you might have 3 to 5 or even 6 clipping points. And those clipping points are scored whether they're for the front of the car or the rear of the car. So you're technically, from the time you initiate, you have your start line, you build up your speed, you'll initiate into your first corner. So from the time you initiate, those back wheels have to be spinning and you have to be drifting. So you're basically losing traction on the rear wheels, but you're in complete control most of the time. The clipping points themselves, they're judged. This is why the judges are there. They're the ones that set out the track. So they say, okay, if they want the rear of the car to slide across one point against a wall, then maybe the front of the car has to go, you know. So you're swapping and changing your direction all the time. So, as I said, they'd have different points. You're getting tongue-tied. Your points basically add up from your style, your aggression, your speed, your angle, and the smoothness through the line.
Okay, so in some ways it's like gymnastics.
Actually,
in a car at much angrier speeds.
I suppose the way I'd kind of explain it more simply, it's like figure skating. It's precision.
Okay.
You know, although you're on ice, you know, you're losing your, you know, it's pretty hard to control.
Your explanation is much better than mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I have it
you
now.
Get the gist of it.
Yeah. If the listeners are listening and you've got it, can you please tweet me and let me know what it is? Because I'm still a little bit confused. I'm going to have to Google it when I get out of this interview. But no, it's good. We spoke on Monday night at the panel discussion, and you didn't want to get into it there, but I'm going to ask you about it now. You mentioned that there were some unsavory incidents, particularly when you were competing in the UK. Mm-hmm. How much are you prepared to tell us about those kind of events?
I can be pretty open. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, I went through a lot of bullshit. Excuse, pardon the pun. I went through a lot in the UK, but I'm not here to focus on the negative. I went through that and it nearly stopped me competing. It nearly made me give up. But instead of focusing on the negative, I used that negative as energy to fuel where I am today.
Okay, we'll get to the positive, and I promise it we'll do it as positive as possible.
But
explain a little bit about what happened, because the listeners aren't familiar with you and your story. So tell us about what happened, and then we'll look at how that maybe made you into a more confident, more independent competitor.
Yeah, I started in the UK. Well, obviously, I was driving in Ireland, first of all. I think I'd done 2 or 3 years here, 2 years. And then I decided, well, I was getting consistent and I wanted to break bigger. There was nothing really in Ireland. We all know it's a pretty tough nut to crack for anything like professional sports anyway. So I went to the UK because I wanted to extend my profile and experience. I was doing pretty good out there. Started as same as here. I was climbing ladders, doing very well. I was getting podiums. And then as it started to turn into looking for sponsorship and things, I was surrounded by a certain team who were after getting a very big sponsorship deal. And instead of them seeing me as someone that could actually extend it even more, being the woman, they basically seen me like a fly and tried swatting me. And it turned pretty, pretty nasty over time. I was kind of pretty naive to it back in that moment. You know, I was kind of letting things slide over, going, no, I'm imagining it, no. You know, it was a typical bullying. It was just very typical bully stuff.
Was it because you're a female?
Yeah, it was definitely threatened. They were threatened by me, whether it was by my success, whether it was because I was a woman and they were men. You know, sometimes if you're being bullied by someone of the same sex, it's a little bit different. But when you have a team of 3 guys, plus partners and plus some family members, it gets pretty intimidating. I think it went on for about 2 years in total, and the final straw for me was my mum actually came to an event with me. I had a large truck. I used to transport cars to all the events. This was my way to try balance the finance and to afford it. I actually started a business transporting cars, so I would go and take their cars as well. So I was basically doing everything I could to help, but I was getting nothing in return, only mental abuse, basically. Then some small damage started on my car. So I started to wake up a little bit, but I was still unsure of how to deal with it because I was in so deep at this point. And my mum came to this event. I'll never forget. It was in Newcastle, up in the northeast, I think it is, of the UK. And she actually fell and she broke her wrist. And I was working on the car that evening. She came up to me and goes, Neil, I have to go to the hospital. And I was like, oh, mum. I said, you're winding me up. You're taking the piss, you know, what's going on? And she goes, no, really, I'm after braking. So that was one aspect of it. The next day we were loading up all the cars. And obviously my mum, she was only there for mental, you know, support. She doesn't work on the car or anything. And the cars were literally kind of dumped. And there was a few sly comments, and there was a few different things. But over the whole course of that weekend, it was just a completely different vibe. It was horrible and nasty. So much so to the point that there was actually another team I was parked with at the time. One of the guys, his dad, actually came up to me at the end of the event, and he goes, Danielle, you don't need to worry. I've checked the brakes in your truck. You're fine. Now, that was the kind of eye-opener that if an outsider was actually looking in on this... And
they could see it.
And they,
imagine
that's the
actually
extreme,
what was going through your head.
Yeah, that's the extreme that they seen just from observing. And it was at that point I just... What the hell am I doing here? You know, I don't go to events for this shit. You know, I come... And there's one thing I always said was at the start of drifting, the day I don't enjoy it is the day I'll walk away. I'm doing it for fun. And it was at that, like, I was living in the UK at the time, and kind of I was associated with these people 95% of my time. So it was kind of like my UK family, if you know that kind. It was a weird setup.
But, strange kind of family, to be honest.
Well, I wouldn't call it family, but...
So let's get on to the positive side of it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that it almost drove you out of the sport, but you didn't let it. You decided you were going to be bigger than that, and you actually moved on to bigger and better pastures.
Yeah, I took it. Like, it was that. I think it just took my mum being at that event, because she hadn't been to a few previous. And I think it took my mum to be at that event and something dramatic happened to her for me to snap out of it. And as I say, I literally went back that night straight. I think it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I had gone actually back to the garage. I had another car. I loaded the truck with absolutely everything. And I went straight for Holyhead to come home. And just, I'll get to the positive now in a second. I just want to explain to listeners is, it kind of sounds a bit traumatic with the shit, but I'll actually tell you, it took me about 2 years to actually come out of that black hole. Although I was competing and doing things, it wasn't until I got
functioning.
Home that
you're
I realised how bad they had driven me down, and they'd taken my character, they'd taken a lot from me. But with the help of my mum, as I said, now we'll get to the positive, is I was just not willing to give up on it. At one point I was, but my mum just basically said, look, Danielle, let's do it this way. I don't have the money, I don't have the financial support, but I'll get behind you 200% for 1 year. We'll see how we go, see what you can do, and at least if it doesn't happen, you know, you'll have no regrets. And that was 2013. She got behind me, and I ended up winning the first European Championship. So literally it took all that anger. I hadn't got any release from the anger and the sadness and the stress that I had gone through. So I actually took it out in the car when I was driving, and I loved it. That was my release. But it's like going back to, I suppose, like all the obstacles that I faced to get to these events. Nothing is ever going to be as bad as that time I went through with the bullying and the mental abuse, so to speak. So I never look back on that. So if I find, okay, damn, I've no van to go to Europe, that's minor. That's a minor problem.
Well, it's minor until you're standing there looking at your car going, how am I going to get to France next week or to Serbia next week?
If I had to drive it, I would. Well, but
you must be so sick of ferries at this stage.
Yeah, I think we're nearly on first term names with a lot of the crew.
In a perfect world, mm-hmm. what would make your life easier? Other than somebody coming in and writing you a big check and saying, here, we're sponsoring you for the year. But in a perfect world, what would your 2016 or 2017 seasons look like from an organisational and a financial point of view?
Ideally, I mean, as I say, I travel to these events alone with my mum. It's very rare that we can take someone to help me, even just to change tyres. And from last year, you know, every year is an eye-opener. And at the level I have surpassed any one person's ability to have done and achieved what I have done so far. And it is time that I do need help. I need someone to help me with the car mechanically at events. I need someone that can guide me on the radio when I'm driving and making mistakes and things like that. Ideally, I need about two people extra to join us on these events. Obviously, this is all related to finance. It is just down to financial help. But yeah, I'd like to build up a small team, you know, go out there, show that, you know, I've proved I can do this on my own. Now let's rock the big boys and show what I can do.
How much money would that take?
It really depends on the events, you know. There's 8 championship rounds in Europe this season with the Pro Series, which is the guys. And that is my ultimate goal. I want to maybe leave the Women's Championship just as a side burner and just more or less compete in it, not for fun because it is still a challenge, but I would love to compete in those 8 events and properly make my mark across Europe against the big guys that have like 6-figure teams or 6-figure some teams, 10 guys running around after them. Ideally, realistically, to do those 8 events, if I had €100,000, that would be an ideal world. Now, that could be short by not a lot, or it could, you know, it's really every event is so different price-wise and cost-wise. But look, we none of us live in an ideal world.
How realistic is it that some sponsor might come in and say, we're going to buy into Danielle Murphy, we're going to buy into the concept of her as one of the boys, basically, at the head of the pack? Is there any likelihood that's going to happen?
I don't know. Like, I mean, even down to the marketing end of things, I've no experience in sales and marketing, but I'm doing it. You know, I'm kind of learning as I'm going. And maybe maybe because I'm doing it and I don't have the knowledge, maybe I'm losing a couple of years because of that while I'm learning and trying to tap into things. But yeah, I mean, an ideal world, I hope there is. You know, there is a lot of people that have come on board the last couple of years to support me because they believe in me. You know, they believe in what I'm doing. They believe in the brand I've built. You know, I'm not just about drifting. I have done other racing. I've done other areas and proved my ability as a natural driver with good results. You know, I'm involved with the road safety campaign with Eugene Donnelly. He's an Irish tarmac. He's five-time Irish tarmac rally champion. You know, so it's different things. It's not all about drifting. You know, some companies, it's a brand ambassador. It's basically the word you want to use. I need to be able to give a company what they can give me back. It's give and take. You know, it's not just all, oh, give me €100,000 and I'll put a sticker on the car. You know, it doesn't really work like that.
So say if there's a CEO or a marketing manager of a company listening to this show, what can Danielle Murphy Racing offer them in return for any possible sponsorship or investment in the team?
Basically, what I can offer, aside from being unique, you know, I am the only woman in Ireland as a professional driver doing what I'm doing. I'm representing Ireland across the world. I've been lucky, as I say, I've been to New Zealand. There's other, you know, there's other challenges this
year. How did you get the car to New Zealand? I meant to ask that the other night.
Oh, sorry. No, they hired a car. So, okay. Again, it was jumping into a strange car and I came third. But no, I have a lot to offer in the sense that I'm marketable. I've very good character. I'm very outgoing. I can speak both on and off camera. As I said, I'm talking to you now. I'm waffling away here. But no, I have a very good presence. I have a lot of experience in that aspect with the media, advertising and things like that. The car, as I say, is an advertising bonus between... We do videos at events. We do video blogs. People actually really enjoy the video blogs that I do because I literally video live on the iPhone as, you know, okay, we're in France now. Or
not while you're driving, I hope.
No. But there's a couple of good videos.
Do you have a GoPro in the car when you're driving?
Of course. Yeah, no, you should actually check it out because we do have a lot of videos on YouTube. If you search Danielle Murphy Drifting or on Vimeo or actually under Little Rebels TV. But there's a lot of things, you know, there's quality there. I'm not here to just jump in and go. I'm here because... I actually said in a video we done back in 2013, I was involved with Nurofen Ireland. And at the end of that video, I literally just said, I want the world to know who Danielle Murphy is. And that's pretty much still my mission now at the moment.
We finish the show every week with the same question. What can the listeners of the podcast do for Danielle Murphy? If you had one ask, what would you ask them to do?
My God, should have done my homework on this one. No, do you know what? I'm going to go completely opposite to what people are probably thinking. There's one thing that I would ask is when it actually comes down to road safety, don't be an idiot on the road. You know, between proper maintenance of your tyres, check your tyres, the condition for the current conditions, you know, drinking, driving, drugs, driving, that speaks for itself. But in general, it's just take care on the roads.
Okay.
That's definitely not what you're expecting, is it?
I'm going to check my tires as we speak. Danielle Murphy, it's been an absolute pleasure have you on the show this week. Best of luck in 2016 in the Drift Championships. Hopefully we will be talking to you in 2017 as the Queen and King of Europe. The very best of luck, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you very much. And for anyone that does want to follow the adventures and the madness, believe me, I'm on Facebook as Danielle Murphy Drifting. And across Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope, it's Drift_Queen1.
Awesome. People can follow you there. Thank you very much, Danielle.
No problem at all.
Very best of luck for the season ahead.
Thank you, everyone.